This year has been a great year. It's been a year of celebration. I was talking to my sister about this on the phone yesterday. She said, what have you been doing? She said, well, it's hard to put into words, but every month we seem to be enjoying ourselves in a different way. And it's been really, really good. But it's also been a year of reflection, a year of looking back, celebrating 200 years, looking forward as well. We've had the Living Stones Challenge, this idea we're living stones. And so therefore we need more living stones. Otherwise it'll just be an empty building in a few generations' time. And this last 4 weeks, our theme has been together again for the future, as Grant was explaining. And our hope is that we'll be spending the coming week praying together, not necessarily all in the one place, but still praying together for the future. And as far as we are able, we'll be spending Friday fasting together. Again, not necessarily all one in the same place, but together. And that in the process, we'll be reviewing our giving together, because the need is great. But first, I want to place all of this in a wider context. If you were here last week, you'd have heard our guest preacher, Ian Penman, talking about the fact that we are like a city on a hill, and we need to let our light shine, and we need to tell our stories of the difference that our faith has made in our lives. And so we need to be different. Our faith does need to make a difference in our lives. Otherwise, we've got no story to tell. So what is this difference? Well, one way of understanding it would be by using a very old-fashioned word. And it's the word idle. I don't mean idle, you know, sitting around watching telly and eating pizza. I mean idle, I-D-O-L. Things that the Bible warns us against over and over and over again. Most people, when they hear the word idol, they immediately think of a Indian temple or a temple in Thailand, you know, and statues and things like that. But an idol is actually much more than that, which is why the Bible warns us against idols. Essentially, there are two ways of recognizing an idol. The first is that it is something that is false. It doesn't actually do what it says it can do. It doesn't actually deliver. So there's an element of deception involved. And the second thing is it gets between us and God. It gets between us and God. It gets in the way. Here in the West, the three chief idols we seem to struggle with are fairly easy to spot. There's the idol of perfect health. We are obsessed with health in the West. We're obsessed with image. We're obsessed with youth. We're constantly trying to make ourselves younger, which of course is not possible, but at least make ourselves look younger. There's industry, there's fortunes built on this idol. Another idol is the idol of personal fulfillment. You know, this sense that everyone has a right to live their dream. Everyone has a right to live their dream. Doesn't matter what it costs anyone else, they have a right to live their dream. It's something that's peculiarly Western. It's I don't know, maybe it's a luxury we think we can afford. But the third idol is probably the biggest of all, and it's the idol of materialism, and that's what we're looking at today, the idol of materialism. Now, materialism is not money. Materialism is not possessions. There's nothing wrong with money, and there's nothing wrong with possessions. That's not materialism. Materialism is an ism. It's an ideology. It's the belief that money and possessions can solve everything, that they are the answer, that they are the way to happiness. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has a lot to say about materialism. And as always, he's great with images. And we're just going to look at a short passage where he's talking about materialism. And he uses three images, three sets of opposites. Okay? So see if you can spot them. If you want to follow in the Pew Bibles, it's on page number 971. And we're looking at Matthew chapter 6. And we're reading from verse 19 to the end of verse 24. Matthew chapter 6, beginning at verse 19. So this is Jesus speaking, and this is part of his, you know, the core of his teaching. This is what he really believes. This is what he wants us to know. Jesus said, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." So did you spot the three images? Actually, they're quite obvious, really. The three sets of opposites. There's treasures on heaven. There's two treasures, two eyes, and two masters. Those are the three sets of opposites he uses. And I want, just because I want to keep us on our toes, I'm going to do those in reverse order, okay? So I'm going to start with the two masters. What does he say? He says in verse 24, "No one can serve two masters. Either they will hate the one and love the other, or they'll be devoted to the one and despise the other." What is a master? It's okay, it's not a rhetorical question. It is a rhetorical question. What is a master? A master is a person in charge. The master is the boss, is the line manager, is the one who you have to do what they say. That's the whole idea behind it. You don't have a choice in the matter. They're your master. If they tell you to do something, you'll do it. No one can serve two masters, says Jesus. In other words, he's forcing us to ask a really important question for our lives. Who have we put in charge of our lives? That's what he's asking here. Have we put God in charge of our lives, or have we put materialism in charge of our lives, the love of money? Have we put that in charge of our lives? Because he says you can't serve both. They're actually opposite. They'll drag you in opposite directions. They're incompatible. Remember those two tests I mentioned. How do we spot an idol? Well, an idol is, firstly, it's false. It can't deliver. Listen to these words, ancient words from the book of Ecclesiastes. "Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income." An idol cannot deliver. It cannot do what it says it can do. You probably heard that famous quote from Rockefeller. He was, at this time, the richest man on the planet. And I'm not sure who it was who asked him the question, "So when are you going to stop making money?" And his reply was, "When I have just a little bit more." You never quite have enough because it's a false god. It's an idol. It can't actually deliver. And the other test, it gets between you and God. You know what the chief symptom of materialism is? It's worry. If you haven't got enough, you're worried about how you're going to get enough. If you've got tons, you're worried about losing it somehow. And yet, if God knows our needs, why do we worry? See, it's something that's getting between us and God. My old friend Ronnie Wallace used to say this: worry is the warning light that says that God has been shoved into the sidelines. It's the warning light that says God has been shoved into the sidelines. So it's an idol. It's getting in the way. It's shoving God into the sidelines. So, says Jesus, you cannot serve both God and money. They're incompatible. And yet, we have to ask, so why do we so easily forget this? Because we do. I mean, I forget it. We all do. Well, the clue lies in the second pair of opposites, the two eyes. What do we look at? Or when we look, what do we see? There's an eye that is evil, and there's an eye that is pure, says Jesus. And the eye is the lamp of the body. It lets in the light so that we can see. The eye that is evil can see only material things. And so that blocks out the light of God's presence. So here, in this simple image, Jesus is actually asking us another very fundamental question. He's saying, when we look out in the world, what do we see? Do we see only material things? Do we see things that we have, or things that we don't have, or things that we think we need we should have, or things that we want to have? Is that all we see? Or do we see God and his faithful, loving, generous presence? And now the final pair of opposites. And this is the one that's the most puzzling. Earthly treasure and heavenly treasure. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, says Jesus. In other words, don't put your hopes in material possessions, because they never last. Instead, store up treasures in heaven. And of course, the puzzling thing is, what exactly does he mean when he says treasures in heaven? Because the immediate assumption, if you're not careful, is to think that he's sort of talking about brownie points here. You know, you do lots of good deeds. God writes it in a book. And then once you get to the other side, he looks at the book and says, oh, yes, very good, here, here. And he rewards you. Because a bit like a bank transfer. You know, you put your down payment here, and then you can withdraw the with interest, usually, whatever it is. So it's a way of moving money. You pay now, you collect later. Is that what he means when he's talking about treasures in heaven? See, my problem with that is it actually goes against everything I know that Jesus stands for. Jesus is constantly getting on about people, about the fact that you cannot buy God's love with your good deeds. All that leads to is self-righteousness and hypocrisy. Jesus says, if you want to save your life, you've got to lose it. Jesus himself, by example, gives his life, and he calls us to follow him. See my problem here? To see treasures in heaven as sort of a pay now, collect later system is just a completely, it goes against everything Jesus is saying, and it's to inhabit a world where everything is to do with, you know, weights and measures and earning something so it gets paid back to you. Lindsay and I lived in a world like that for a number of years. It was the world of Hinduism. Hinduism's all about pay now and collect later. That's what Hinduism's about. Lead a good life now, you live in a better life later. It's all about that. And where we were in the village, every act of kindness that we did, not that we measured it, but I remember once we were even nice to our dog, okay? Now, it wasn't really our dog. It was a stray dog called Boney Mutt, Boney M, if any of you remember Boney M. And someone had thrown a brick at this dog. No one liked dogs in Pakistan. They have to keep their distance. But we looked after Boney. Great guard dog, by the way. And she'd hurt her paw. And we couldn't really go near her. She'd bite our hands off. So Lindsay crushed up some Disprin and put it in some flour and gave the flour to her to eat. And of course she went bing, as you do, because she wasn't used to Disprin. And that enabled us to just check it wasn't broken. And there's a crowd gathered round. And they didn't say things like, oh, they're stupid Westerners, which you'd expect them to say. Nor did they say, oh, that's nice. They said, oh, my goodness, that's a very religious act they're doing. You know, even looking after the dog is interpreted in terms of pay now, collect later. And yet that's not the world that Jesus teaches us about. He teaches about a different type of world. That world, the pay now, collect later world, means everything you do is about yourself. It's about rewards for you. And yet Jesus doesn't say that. He says, live for others. So I don't think, when he mentions treasures in heaven, that he can be talking about that sort of world, that sort of earthly way of seeing things. So I've got a problem. So what does he mean by treasures in heaven? And I think the answer's there in the Bible, if we look for it. In fact, I think the answer is already there inside us deep down if we look for it. Let me put it this way. When I have to face death, which I will have to do, and we all have to do, What is going to matter to me most? Will it be the things I own? Will it be the size of my house or my car or my holiday cottage or whatever? Of course it won't. Will it be the things I've achieved? I don't think so. It'll be two things, and they're both connected. One's connected to the other, and it's the connection that's really important. When I have to face death, what will matter to me most will be the people that I've come to love. And whether or not I'm going to see them again, that's what's going to matter to me most. The people I've come to love, and whether or not I'm going to see them again. I mean, in Jesus, we have the assurance of life after death. It's one of the amazing things he offers us. But who are we going to share that with? Listen again to what he says. Don't store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy. No, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy. Where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's like Jesus is turning our understanding of treasure on its head. He's not talking about personal reward at all. He's talking about the reason he came. He's talking about the reason he calls us to follow him. He's talking about this kingdom of God, which is precious like a treasure, which he wants everybody to share in. He wants us to tell people about it. He wants people to hear about him so that they may be turned and be saved, so that their future will be secure. It's okay, he has to go off to work. It's my fault. Bye, Graham. Take care. See, treasures in heaven are not about us at all. They're about those that we love and have come to love, and who have been brought into a saving faith in Jesus. These are the treasures that will last a lifetime. See, heaven's not about possessions. Heaven is about relationships. It's about who we love and who we're with. You see, when it comes down to it, these last few weeks, when we've been thinking about together again for the future, have really been about ways in which we can show God what matters most in our lives and how much they matter. When we pray, we show God how much something matters to us, and we do it in our words. When we fast, we show God how much something matters to us, and we do it with our actions. And when we tithe, we show God how much something matters to us, and we do it with our priorities. We put our money where our mouth is. And as Grant said, here at Liberton, apart from maintenance on our buildings, we try and use our general income to invest in people. And so we employ someone like Ray. Ray's remit isn't just for the membership of this church. Ray's remit extends far beyond the boundaries of this church. He shows God's love, and he organizes the showing of God's love to people from all over Southeast Edinburgh. Andy and Rachel, it's the same. We don't have any schools in our parish. They're there to look after our children, but they're also there to share God's love with children all over Southeast Edinburgh, which they do really successfully. And Jackie and Willie and Mary, they look after our halls and make sure that they are a place of welcome because they are our biggest asset. People from all over the area come and use our halls, which we offer to them freely. And our hope in doing all of this is an outreach hope. It's that by coming into our orbit, by coming into relationship with us, they could catch a glimpse of something that's different and be drawn to find out, not about us, but about Jesus, the one who makes the difference, and so might hear the gospel and be saved. Treasures in heaven. So it's for this reason that we're in deficit, and for this reason we're asking everybody to renew their giving. And here's something interesting that I had not planned at all. Back on the first Sunday of October, when I first preached about tithing, there was a visitor that particular Sunday. I don't know why he came that Sunday, but it certainly wasn't a coincidence. But he spoke to me at the door. He'd come all the way down from Aberdeen, and that particular Sunday he happened to be in the church. He spoke to me, it wasn't the door, it was the gate he spoke to me. He said, "Oh, you know, I was interested in what you had to say about tithing. Can I share some of my own experiences with you?" I said, "Yes." I wasn't quite sure what to expect. And he emailed them to me. And basically, it's his testimony. It's him talking about the difference tithing has made in his life. And it's not been what you think. It's actually been a liberating thing for him. Listen to this. In the early 1980s, in 1983 to be exact, my minister preached on Malachi chapter 3, where the Lord commands us to bring the full tithe into his house to see whether or not the Lord would open up the windows of heaven. I was deeply touched by the word, and I and my wife, then a full-time mother of four who couldn't work, invited the minister around to explain this. He explained that what he was talking about was the first tithe, not the last. This was in response to my naive remark that I did not know if I had have a tithe left over by the time I paid all the monthly bills. If you like, the tithe is the first fruits. As Grant says, we give that to God, and then we worry about the monthly bills from what's left. First give to God. So he thought about this hard, and he prayed about it, and one or two miraculous things seemed to happen to pushing him in that direction. And he and his wife committed to tithing, and they have tithed ever since. Look at the impact it's had on their lives. Before I tithed, I was only scraping by. After I started to tithe, money went further, lasted longer, and contrary to all expectations, was always in greater supply. Now, this is not about the prosperity gospel here. The prosperity gospel says you measure someone's spirituality by how wealthy they are. We're not talking about that at all. We're talking about how putting God first can set us free from materialism. Look at the change in him. I went from being a penurious, I had to ask David Lamb how to pronounce that actually, penurious. I'm not quite sure what it means, but it doesn't sound too nice. I went from being a penurious, self-pitying, and self-excusing person to one whose new acts of generosity made me better off. The more I gave to the church and to charity, the more I was entrusted with. Before I tithed, I was always in the red. After I tithed, I was always in the black. I even paid off my mortgage by the time I retired. It makes no logical sense to those who think in terms of this world, but to those who take God at his word, not legalistically, but in a trustful relationship, tithing makes the impossible happen. It is the greatest of blessings, but it flows from taking God at his word. In particular, I found the following text to be true in my own life. And then he quotes Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. That's what's so lovely about being a minister. You know, surprising things happen that sort of affirm what's happening around about you. And there was one of those things. So, when it comes to your giving, please do not think of it simply in material terms. You know, don't think of it, who is giving, how much to give, what do I get back in return? That is thinking of it in material, worldly terms. Rather, think of it in spiritual terms. Think of it in terms of what I believe. Who do I put my trust in? And please don't think of it as something that's solely for the benefit of Liberton Kirk. Rather, think of it in terms of the treasures that Jesus was talking about. Think of it as a way we can all play our part in storing up treasures in heaven. People whom we've come to love. People who have tasted the joy of the kingdom and come to share in it. People who've come to a saving faith in Jesus Christ our Lord. So there's my thoughts. And let's just take maybe a couple of minutes. It's always good to just take some time to reflect on what you've heard and your own thoughts. What has God been saying to you? What are you going to do about it?